Welcome to the Layer 8 Podcast, Season 2. This season, we'll again hear from the experts. These experts are social engineers and open source intelligence investigators. Sometimes, they'll tell us stories about their experiences, and sometimes, we'll have some questions for them. We hope you'll enjoy them.
Welcome to this episode of the Layer 8 Podcast. We have a special episode for you with three guests from the Innocent Lives Foundation. Hi to the three of you.
Hey, Patrick, how are you?
I'm doing great today. I'm going to ask each of you to let us know who you are. Tell us a little bit about what you do at the Innocent Lives Foundation. Shane, would you like to go first?
Sure, be happy to. My name is Shane McCombs. I serve as the COO at the Innocent Lives Foundation. We are almost 3 years old. Well, we're almost 4 years old, and I've been here for 3 years already.
Mandy, you want to tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I am Mandy Cox. I'm the senior team leader at Innocent Lives Foundation. So I run the education and outreach department and the development team. But I was a volunteer for, I think, 2 years before that.
And John, how about you?
So my name is John McCombs, and I am the executive assistant to the Innocent Lives Foundation, which is a fancy way of saying that I do just about anything they ask me to do. As Shane calls it, the do boy. So I'm just here to help out and help things run as smoothly as possible.
I think that role is often known as the most important one in a company.
Yeah, or the gopher or something like that, you know.
Don't tell him that.
But we also do that to Mandy. That's why she came up with that job title, because she does so much for us. We had a challenging time. So, everybody here really, really jumps in, and they do the best they can with whatever's thrown at them.
Yeah, it was funny. You're talking about Mandy's job title, because we sat down and we just couldn't figure anything out, because it's very abnormal that you find someone who's talented in the graphic design and education outreach, that sort of department, and also a developer. So it was like, well, I have no idea what we should call her.
I think you can actually say that it's rare that you can find someone who can fool everyone into thinking that you can do all of those things. And then
you basically interviewed for 2 years as a volunteer, so no fooling on this end.
I've fooled people for 2 years now.
So, Shane, this is the Innocent Lives Foundation. Can you also give us a little bit of a background for people that aren't familiar with that organization, what it is, what you do?
Sure. So at the Innocent Lives Foundation, we are a nonprofit, and we identify child predators, and we turn them into law enforcement. So we are actually looking for anyone who is requesting, trading, or producing child sexual abuse material, or they're trying to profit from it, or they're hosting websites. Essentially, these predators go out there and do horrible things to these kids, and they think they can remain anonymous. And we're here to show them that they cannot. Until now, up to this date, we just crossed our 300 mark line. We've been able to have 300 cases accepted by law enforcement. The other key point is we are a non-vigilante group, and we work with law enforcement in order to achieve the mission.
And I think I've heard before that for each person that you take off the streets, that there is some number of victims that are saved. Is that, am I along the right lines with that sort of thing?
You're along the right lines. So the study was done all the way back in, I believe, 1995, maybe 97. But they found that a serial predator could affect up to 400 children. And that was before what the modern day internet was in existence. That was before all the things that we do out on the open web. And now we're finding people getting arrested. One person had 40 years worth of what's called child pornography on their computer. How many children was he affecting? We just don't have a good number. So we have to go all the way back to that one study that we can really bank on. So yeah, you could affect up to 400 kids by getting one of these guys off the street. And we're very sure that number is much higher, but we don't have a real study to back it up. So we're hesitant to say more than that.
Mandy, how does the ILF do this kind of work? How do you unmask these child predators? How does the organization find these people?
We have a department called the Predator Identification Team, and what they do is they use open source intelligence to gather information on people requesting this type of information on kids. So they go out there, they gather this information, they put an identity to a name or a username basically, and then they compile a report and then send it over to law enforcement, and that's how we operate.
Do you ever hear back from law enforcement about how successful your investigations are?
sort of. That's kind of where we hand things off, and then that's kind of the end of our involvement, really. So we're not really involved in the what's it called?
Prosecution.
Thank you. That's not really what we do. So it's nice to hear that we were involved in, putting someone away, but at the same time, it's also good to know when our work is finished. So we also can't really report that to the public either when that happens, because like for security reasons. But yeah, law enforcement doesn't really come back and say, "Hey, yeah, you did this or that." It's just kind of we get to hand off our work and then say, "Yep, on to the next one."
So what happens is law enforcement, they're never under an obligation ever to give us back information. And what we're finding though is as our relationships with them continue to grow and get better, this year we've received feedback on several cases. The other thing to keep in mind though, and of course we can't publish the information, but internally we celebrate as we're able to share amongst each other what took place.
So, Mandy, that separation of where you give the information to the law enforcement officials, is that enough of a firewall to keep ILF away from the predators themselves? Because I would think those can be scary people, and if they find out it's the ILF that gave police the information, they might come back after you.
Right, so that's why we're like a non-vigilante group, is so we don't have any interaction. So that's we're doing open source intelligence, so we just gather information. We're not, talking to anyone, right? So we hand off the information to law enforcement, and then they're the ones doing, I guess all the groundwork, right? So there's no like public information saying which cases I guess we worked or whatever. And I mean, I don't even know which cases we've worked. So I don't know what names, to be looking out for. I'm just excited anytime that there's any sort of news article that says, yeah, someone was taken off the streets. It's a win for everyone. Anytime any child predator is taken off the streets, I don't really care if we were the ones that did it or someone else was able to do it. It's a win for everyone. So I personally don't care if we were the ones that were involved. So because I mean, for security reasons, I would it's an issue if we were publicly saying, "Hell yeah, we were involved in that case." If we were to, put out on Twitter, "Oh yeah, we were part of this case." If that person happened to go free, then they would have a list of people to contact about that. So
To have a conversation with.
yeah, let's go visit. We have addresses now. So yeah, so we don't exactly say that publicly, and no one else does either. So
And there's an added benefit to that too, which is really nice, is that once we hand that off, not only for the security purposes, knowing that our people are protected, that information can't get leaked, but also that we're not involved in the prosecution. So and that can be a very long process, and especially if our team was having to get pulled in for things like testimony and whatnot, that could just make it that much harder for us to dedicate time to the next case. And then that's what we're really focused on, is getting that next case handed off to them so we can keep going and find the next guy.
And John, I also believe that the way that you hand over much of the information to law enforcement, because it's OSINT, is going to be through easily reproducible information. So what you're giving to them isn't necessarily what police are going to bring into a court. The police might reproduce everything that you do. So the police can say, "We found this in the court case." Is that accurate to say?
Yeah, that's exactly spot on. And we hand them a file that is basically a how to figure out what we've already found, right? And for that exact purpose. So they can put their hands on the keyboard, their agents, and they can find this information themselves. and then they maintain complete chain of command. And it's a real benefit. It expedites the process in a lot of ways. And it, like I said, it allows us to get back to work and find the next person.
And you refer to the next person. How does that typically work? How do you get the next target? Do law enforcement come to you, or does like somebody off the internet say, "Hey, I think my uncle is doing this bad stuff"? Shane, how do you usually do that sort of thing?
So to answer your question, yes and yes. Law enforcement, they do approach us, and they, when they're looking for an assist on something, they will give us the scope of the work that we can stay within, and then we will go out and do the best we can to make that identification. We do also have people who contact us through our Report a Case on the Innocent Lives Foundation website. When you go through that form and report the case, it goes to people on our team who are especially trained to handle that. And then we're able to see if it can actually be a case that law enforcement would be interested in, and it's one that we can tackle. The third way that we have cases come in is that we do our own identification out there of cases that are going to be good leads. Now, that may sound kind of odd, that what do you mean you're looking for leads and they're good leads, like they got to be qualified? And yeah, actually they do. A lot of the other groups out there who will just turn in names, and they're vigilante groups. It's the equivalent of digital junk mail going into law enforcement. And we know how we feel when we get junk mail. First thing you do is like, why are you wasting my time? And you throw it away and you just think about the waste. Well, we take that out. We want to be sure that every single case that we're handing into law enforcement has been pre-qualified. We know it's something that they can tackle, because the moment we start giving them junk mail, in effect, they aren't going to want to hear from us anymore. And so our goal is to have them wanting to use us as a predator identification as a service, so that we can use the superpowers on the team that of the people in the pit that we've put together and really make excellent use of their time.
How did your organization get started?
So 2017 is the date, and Chris Hadnagy was running into some of this type of stuff out in his day job. And what he realized was, after the first couple of folks he helped get put away, he realized that this is happening a lot, and people in the security industry are uncovering these things, and yet they don't quite know what to do with it. And so he realized that there needed to be a framework. People needed to understand, if I run across this out in my day-to-day work, then what do I do with it? How do I report it? And so that's how the Innocent Lives Foundation started. And Chris built that framework out. We're going now into our fourth year officially. And with that being said, we just crossed a huge number for us, with that being 300 cases accepted by law enforcement. So it's worked out better than I think Chris ever intended for it to. We continue to grow, and we continue to get more people off the street. So those are the things that we're really excited about, having it continue to grow. And that's the short story on how we got started.
And I have to think that when your investigators are doing their work, they see a lot of really bad things. And that has to be hard on them. Do you have support for your people, or how do you help your people who deal with seeing that sort of thing every day in this job?
So the development team has created a tool. It is the Blur tool. It's a browser extension that blurs all images on page load for our predator identification team. So while they're doing their research and stuff, it protects them from seeing anything unless they have to, basically. So if they need to be able to see an image, then they can see parts of it at a time if they need to, and they kind of have to explain why they're in blurring. And we change that as needed going forward, but that's kind of how it functions right now. So images are only part of, what they have to endure, I guess. There's still, words are still graphic, but images are kind of the things that punch you in the face right on page load. So those are blurred so that you can't tell what they are. So we've got that, but also we have a wellness program that you are required to take part of. So the team meets with our wellness director, Erin. She is lovely. You meet with her once a month to talk about what you're doing and how you're feeling about it, basically to see if you are of sound mind, basically to keep going and doing what you're doing. And she says whether or not you're doing all right every month to keep volunteering or being an employee. Employees have to do it as well. You have to do it once a month, but you're also welcome to visit with her more because she is a full-time employee. So that's been, the wellness program has been in place since the inception of ILF. And it's been, I think that's one of the things that's made ILF so successful is having that program in place. So it's changed over the years, but it's always been a successful program. And I think everyone's always loved it. So it's really great. Yeah.
That sounds like a really great resource. I have to think that there are people out there who really like the type of work that you do. And while it might probably fall a little bit more under the vigilantism that you've described, would you advise against people doing the kind of work that you do on their own because they think that, you know, I'm really good at OSINT, so I want to help. I'm going to go dig in and I'm going to go find information on this person. What type of advice would you give to somebody that wants to just kind of jump in and do this on their own?
So we've actually had that happen. We've had people that we know from the industry who are brilliant at OSINT, and they're just incredible at doing these things. And they'll be talking to us about something, and they'll express some frustration about, well, I just keep running into this problem or that problem, or I can't get the proper response from law enforcement. They won't take me seriously, et cetera. And my question to them, if we're having this conversation, I already know them, is, well, why aren't you on our team? And every single time I've said that, they're like, oh, I hadn't really thought about that. And so we have a few people in the pit who started out that exact same way. And we've said, just come and join us. The framework is already there. We will be able to help protect you on the wellness side. And we'll be able to protect you from a lot of the visuals. We've got it. Come join the team and let's do some more work. And that's worked out really well.
Now, anybody that knows Chris Hadnagy knows that he is an expert in OSINT, but also in social engineering. So do you ever reach out and use social engineering against the people that you're targeting? Do you ever have any kind of contact, whether that's phone calls, email, or even face-to-face with the people that you're investigating?
So if law enforcement hands us a case, if it is within scope of that particular case, and it's with their approval and everything, all the legalities are squared away, absolutely, you just untied our hands. We can now really go to work. But the vast majority of the cases don't line up that way. All the planets just don't line up, so you can really turn us loose. So for the most part, no, we're never reaching out. We're never speaking to these people. So then you may ask, well, then how are you using social engineering in order to be able, if you're not communicating with them? Well, remember, social engineering includes understanding how people think, or their biases, or the things that they tend to lean towards. So by understanding the principles of social engineering and how to wield those, how to weaponize those things, we can then turn around and, so we're reading through a forum, we may get an idea of what it would be like to have a conversation with this person. It can then help us to begin to understand how they're thinking and what directions we may need to be searching in. So it helps us to avoid a lot of dead ends and rabbit holes by really being able to understand how the mind works and then dig in and go after them that way, even though we're not actually having two-way conversations with them.
Let's use a little bit of social engineering through the rest of this episode. So, John, I think the Innocent Lives Foundation has a major fundraiser coming up, one of the annual fundraisers that you do, the ILF Fest. Can you talk a little bit about that, what it is and what you have planned for it?
Absolutely. Yeah, so ILF Fest is, first of all, a blast. So I'm just going to go ahead and plug it right now. As I'm continuing to talk about this, I want everybody to look it up, get familiarized with it, and I want you to come show up. But it's a lot of fun. It helps to appreciate why, how it started and how it turned into what it is. I think is the best way to really tell the story. Last year, we had a volunteer come on board, the cyber mentor, Heath Adams. And Heath is like, hey, have you guys ever done any Twitch streaming? Because Twitch is a great platform for fundraising and things like that. And he's like, you know, I'm a Twitch streamer and I've been able to use it for good and raise some money for various charities. How would you guys feel about that? And I think the funniest part of it was Chris going, oh, no way. There's no way that's going to work. People aren't going to sit here and watch someone else talk on the internet and, you know, raise money. And we're like, well, let's just try it. And he said, okay, fine. And so we get planning it. And originally it started as kind of, hey, let's do a couple hour InfoSec geared conversation, basically. Let's have Heath on. We'll get Chris on. They can talk InfoSec and we'll see if we can raise a little money. And then it just slowly transformed into, well, you know what? This is a dark world we live in. And the organization that we are is unfortunately a reflection of that we have to exist. And instead of having everybody sit there and think about this yet again and realize how scary of a world it is, let's make it fun. Let's do a fun variety stream with all of our really talented people and let's raise some money and have fun. And in the meantime, get to torture Chris a little bit. So that's kind of how it started to grow. And last year was a huge success. We set our goal for $10,000 last year and smashed it by bringing in 33 grand, which was absolutely incredible. The community really showed up and just made it an unbelievable success. And so this year, you know, Chris went from being, oh, I don't know, I don't think that's going to work, to a week after we concluded last year, I'm getting a phone call from him. He's like, okay, so for ILF Fest 2021, I was thinking this. And it's been a long planning process this year, which has been great. It's allowed us to be much more prepared. But we've got a full list of events and lots of fun things happening on July 10th. And I'll stop talking there because I've rambled a bit. But Mandy or Shane, you should fill in on some of the exciting things that we have coming up.
Mandy, I think in the past there's been some eating challenges maybe for Mr. Hadnagy.
And maybe. Possibly.
You might be doing something similar to that this year?
Maybe, possibly. So last year, the big push was to get Chris to eat some pineapple pizza because he loves it so much, which by that I mean he hates it so much. Because, you know, Chris is Italian and apparently it's sinful to eat pineapple on pizza. But I personally am a lover of pineapple pizza because it tastes good and I'm not wrong, but Chris has problems with, you know, his taste buds and his brain, but, you know, we still love him. We forgive him, but what did he say? It was like, we had to raise, was it 10K?
So yeah. Our goal was 10. Oh, go ahead, Shane.
No, I was just going to say, so we're talking about this, what can we do in this two-hour show and everything, and the original goal was like, well, you know, maybe we can try to raise 5K. Chris is like, okay, but then we set it officially at 10K, and so Chris and I are on an update meeting, we're talking about all things ILF, and I said, so, Chris, how much would we need to raise for you to actually eat a pineapple pizza? And he goes, I don't know, what's the goal? And I said, we were setting it at 5. We're going to stretch it out to 10. So 10's the official goal. And he goes, when is it? I said, it's on the 25th. And he goes, all right, $25,000. He goes, not only, if you raise $25,000, will I eat pineapple pizza? I will actually make it live. I will do that if you can raise $25,000, but I don't think you're going to. And that was it. It was over. As soon as that knowledge became public, the community jumped in and they were determined to see Chris eat and make a pineapple pizza. It really took off.
The community loves Chris. He's a pillar in the community and he's just a great guy. And so when he goes, "Oh my gosh, I cannot stand pineapple pizza, but I will have to make it and eat it if you raise 25 grand." That was it. It was a done deal at that point because the community just rallied and were like, "It doesn't matter. It's going to happen." So we just had him prepared. We had him a custom apron and everything because we knew it was, we were bound and determined to bring this to fruition.
It was a beautiful time. Like he ended it definitely happened. He made his own pineapple pizza. He cried a little bit. He cried a lot, but I think he was happy about it. I mean, through the tears and stuff, I'm pretty sure there was like a split second where he smiled, and I think that one little smile meant that he was happy. So he ate the pineapple pizza. Someone may or may not have sent him like three, at least three Domino's double pineapple pizzas, and then I think it ended up being like a $300 slice of pizza that he ate there
Oh, it was
too.
more than that. It started, someone in chat was like, "Hey, if you eat that now," when I, so I love pineapple pizza,
Same, it's
but
good.
I love pineapple pizza, but this Domino's slice was,
That was rough. It
it
was
was too much. It,
Domino's is a little rough,
they
but
must have, they must have hit the plus sign on that, like add pineapple to your pizza
Oh,
like
it
18
was double or
times. It was
triple.
covered. It
Yeah.
was covered in pineapple. You couldn't even see the cheese through the pineapple.
It was
And
beautiful.
so someone in chat was like, "Hey, I'll give you $300. I'll make a donation right now. $300 for you to eat one of those Domino slices." And Chris is like, "Heck no." He's like, "I'll pay myself $300 to not eat it. There's no chance I'm eating that." And then it just kept growing. Someone was like, "Well, I'll toss in 100." Someone else is like, "Well, I'll toss in 200." And I think it ended up being a $700 or $800 slice by the time he finally ate it.
It was worth it. That one he
Oh,
cried. He did not smile for that one. But yeah, so last year's was all pineapple pizza, and we kind of beat that one to death. So this year we're doing the sandwich of suffering, which even I can't really, I would not eat this. I would eat no part of this. but so what we're gonna do is at each $5,000 donation tier. So once we hit each $5,000 threshold, the Twitch audience, I guess, will be able to vote in a poll and choose the next topping for this sandwich, I guess we can call it. and each level just kind of gets worse and worse. So by the end, it'll just be this just awful, awful concoction of things. It will be whatever the audience makes of it. Honestly, there's not even a situation in which this ends up being a good sandwich. Just because one of the levels is like sweets, so like candy. You can't do that. But we
no,
are going to. So.
and one of the options for the candies, this is a sneak preview because it's not up on the website yet. You'll see something sweet on the website, but we can tell you, Patrick, and your listeners, one of those options is going to be Pop Rocks. So
I want it to win
you,
so bad.
oh, I know, you've got these meats and sort of cheeses. If you see some of the cheese options, like Cheese Whiz is one of them, right? So like all of this sort of food, and then it's going to be popping. So I'm really pulling for Pop Rocks to make it in the sandwich, but we'll see.
Yeah, I mostly just kind of want to see what happens if you do have Cheese Whiz and then you put Pop Rocks on top of it. I just kind of want to know what happens for the sake of science. Let alone what happens if you eat it. I'm not even worried about that step. I just want to know what happens when you put Pop Rocks on Cheese Whiz. I could do that myself, but I could also, pay $10,000 to see it happen on Twitch.
InnocentLivesFoundation.org site and click the ILF Fest 2021. When you get to that menu, you can see the sandwich of suffering there. And Chris was not very pleased when we started out the we, look, everyone gets to choose. He's got three options for bread. And he wasn't happy with this for some reason. But you can have sprouted grain, you can have rye, or he can start his sandwich with a Domino's pineapple pizza slice. So we're just, he did not love that option, but hey, he didn't say we couldn't. So why not? That's what we did.
And if you go to that page, see some of the ingredients in there, from Limburger cheese, blended anchovies, Spam. You people also have insects on the list. That's pretty harsh.
Apparently he was more upset by Spam than he was crickets. So I'm rooting for Spam.
Yeah, you know, it's really funny we're going down this list, because obviously we don't want to, you know, hurt him. Like, we don't want him to get sick off this thing, right?
Physically, so emotionally, fine.
Well, emotionally, a different story. We have Erin for that. She can repair his damaged soul. But physically, we didn't want to, you know, harm him. So we got this all approved by him before we put it up on the site, of course. And yeah, Mandy was right. He was shockingly okay with the bug part. He was like, oh, well, that's fine. That's just texture. But Spam? I'm like, really, dude? Like, Spam is what you're bothered by, not the scorpions that could potentially be covered in cheese whiz? That's not the issue here? And he was fine with that. So I just, subtle hints, guys. Spam. Spam.
And then you also have four different levels of somethings that are going to be surprises, from something sweet, something bad, something worse, and then something unholy. Which, you have an idea of what's going to be in those. I couldn't even imagine what types of things are going to be coming up with those, because the sandwich is bad enough before you even get to any of those levels, but to finish it with something unholy just doesn't even seem fair.
The listeners can't see John Mitchell's face right now, but I've never seen him smile so big.
Oh, I love it so much. So this is one of the major perks of my job. I got to sit down one day and write this out, you know, and write this up. And I'm sitting there and my mind just kept wandering to worse and worse things. And so we had to separate it into these categories. And unfortunately, I can't give you too much of a spoiler as to what they're going to be. But I can tell you that we got vetoed. Chris said no to chicken feet. So chicken feet were on there, and that got taken out of there, citing choking hazard concerns. So it's along those lines. It's going to be a lot of fun, though, I can tell you that much.
One of the biggest challenges is trying to figure out if it's like the things are legal in the United States, or trying to find out where you can buy it in the United States. It's like, okay, yeah, how do we buy these things?
And some of them are just disgustingly horrible, but for some reason they're like a delicacy in other parts of the world. So some of them, one of the ingredients, I can't even remember the name of it right now, but it was some sort of like fermented old like fish part. And you could buy it on Amazon, but it was like $100 a jar because it was some special delicacy. People eat a lot of weird things, I've come to realize in doing research for science purposes for this sandwich. So I'm very excited to see this abomination all put together.
So it seems like this sandwich of suffering is going to be a huge fun time at ILF Fest. But you also have quite the lineup of speakers that are going to be there. I'm looking at some of the names that you're going to have, where you have like Alith Dennis and Philip Wiley, Dave Kennedy. Do you want to speak a little bit more about some of the guests and some of the board members that you're also going to have there as speakers?
So, yeah, so we wanted to do something for our ambassadors. So we picked two of the ambassadors that have been with us from the very beginning, and then two of our newest. And we kind of sandwiched them for the ambassador panel. And that's the way we're going to start. They're really going to keynote the beginning of ILF Fest for us. Then Chris, it's looking like Chris is going to come on and do some cooking again. We had no idea how that was going to go last year, and we got a ton of positive comments. We put out we gave Twitter the choice of what you wanted Chris to cook. And then once Twitter chose, we published an ingredients list. People went out and got their ingredients, and Chris basically did a school on how to cook this particular recipe. And a lot of people followed along live as they did it and had lunch. So
yeah, people don't know this about Chris. He's very talented, he's very bright, and he's an amazing speaker. And those are all things people know about Chris, but they also don't know that he's actually an amazing cook. He spent many years of his life, and in his newest book, he actually talks about that a little bit. He spent years of his life as a chef. So this was like a genuinely good example of his cooking skill. We're gonna just abuse his skills for, you know, the sandwich later, but this will be fun to actually cook along with.
Dave Kennedy decided he was going to jump in again this year. I mean, Dave is always phenomenal on anything that he is ever on. At 2 o'clock, we've got an OSINT GeoGuessr challenge that's currently in the schedule. And so I don't know if many of the folks listening to this have gotten involved with GeoGuessr, but it's something that is actually a lot of fun to do. We're thinking about doing some more of it on game night. And so we're going to see how that goes. We've got a sponsored segment, and that sponsored segment so far is going to be Security Risk Advisors. They have already signed up as a gold sponsor for us, so that's a $10,000 commitment towards the cause. And so we are thrilled to have them on board. And it's a great story. The way they came up with it is that company, every year they give each employee a set amount of dollars that they will match. Then the employee can go out and can choose the charity that they want, and then Security Risk Advisors will match. Well, they just recently went through that, and then one of our volunteers works there. She went out, she started recruiting for ILF. And so they have, amongst the employees and with the matching from Security Risk Advisors, they're already at $10,000. They think they're gonna have more coming in. So as a gold sponsor, that's a pretty amazing thing for them to do. AJ Cook is up after that, plays JJ on Criminal Minds. Her fan base, they love her. She is an amazing person. She's on our board of directors. And she's also, I guess we can say it out loud, we have scheduled a celebrity auction for near the end of the year with AJ, and then Robin is going to be along with her. And actually, Robin is the next guest on our list. So you've got AJ coming in talking about all the theatrical part of the BAU and all the things that you see on TV and the Criminal Minds show. And then Robin comes in and he's going to tell stories, and he's going to tell true stories that he's gotten clearance for. So Robin is the retired director of the behavioral analysis program for the FBI. So you get the best of both sides of the world there, both the fiction and the reality. And then after that, it's going to close the show with special guest Neil Fallon from the rock band Clutch. And if you didn't see it last year, Neil wrote a song for ILF Fest for Chris Hatnagy. And again, we love picking on Chris, but you know, Chris is like a 13-year-old little fangirl when it comes to Neil Fallon, and he just loves it. And so when Neil unleashed this song and Chris had no idea it was happening, it was just an amazing moment. This particular session with Neil is an Ask Me Anything. So if you ever wanted to know anything about Neil Fallon or about Clutch, he's there to talk to you about it. And so that is a very cool thing to be able to do. And John Mitchell, do you have information on the giveaways? I mean, we've not even talked about the giveaways yet.
Yeah, so we've got some absolutely incredible stuff to give away. Tailgating off that thought of Neil Fallon, so he partners with Orange Amplifiers. They make outrageously nice amps and pedals. Anyone in the music industry is familiar with them already, and they love Clutch. So Neil reached out to them on our behalf and said, hey, we're doing this event. Would you guys be willing to, you know, provide us any stuff that we can give away? And they said, heck yeah. So there's an amp and pedals that have all been signed by the entire band of Clutch that are going to be up for giveaway. And that's just one small thing for the day that we have lined up. We've got some incredible things picked out throughout the rest of the day that I'm going to keep as a surprise for now. They're going to be going up on the website in the next coming weeks. But if you go to Neil's Instagram or his Twitter, that's NP Fallon is his handle. He posted a video of all of the stuff that he's got, all kinds of old Clutch memorabilia, and it's just going to be a blast. And the best part about it is Neil really wanted to make sure that any of his fans or anyone watching had a fair chance to win. And auctions are amazing for charities. They're a great way to raise money. But unfortunately, it kind of blocks out the little guy. Like, I know myself, I could never go to a charity auction and ever get a single thing. I'm going to be outbid, right? So Neil wanted this to be done and how we're going to do all of the giveaways as a raffle. So whether you can donate $1 or $1,000, everyone is going to have a chance of winning. So you can enter into the raffle, and it's a great opportunity. And as a matter of fact, last year, one of Clutch's biggest fans from the UK won some Clutch memorabilia, and it just made her whole year. So it's a really great way to do it, and it's just going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, so if you want to be able to get in on the action as far as winning something or participating in chat, be sure that you've got your Twitch account set up. Be sure you're logged in when you join, and it's twitch.tv Innocent Lives Foundation is where you're going to go. Just go ahead and go there and follow us so you're setting and you're ready. The other thing too is everyone gets a ticket just for showing up, right?
Everyone who has a Twitch account and is logged in will get one free entry throughout the day to any raffle of their choice.
You want to go to twitch.tv/Innocent Lives Foundation. And as was just being mentioned, everyone is going to have an opportunity. So if you donate $1, you're going to get a ticket. If you donate 10, then you'll get 10 tickets, et cetera. But John Mitchell, there's also a caveat to that. What's going to happen as long as you're logged in and you're ready to go and ready to bid?
So as long as you are logged into Twitch, we're going to be running the giveaways every hour. So all you got to do is click on the giveaway link, and you will get one free entry to any raffle of your choice throughout the day, just for being there and just for showing up. So even if you're not in a position to donate, we would still love for you to come and attend, and you still have a chance to win something really awesome.
And if anybody wants to find out more about the Innocent Lives Foundation, where can they go to get that information, Shane?
Go right to our website, innocentlivesfoundation.org. Click on the ILF Fest menu item, and you'll find everything that you need to know.
Shane, when is the ILF Fest, and is there a starting time for it, and anything else that is going to be there that you want to make people aware of?
Yeah, so it is July the 10th, and it starts at 11 a.m. Eastern. And there are a few things. So we did this really cool thing called a VIP pass. It sold out in 8 hours. We just want to tell everyone who purchased the passes, thank you. What that's going to do is just going to let you backstage for the entire day to hang out with us, hang out with all the people who are speaking, and just get a really, really interesting glimpse of what's going on behind the scenes. And you also got some cool swag that we tossed in there since you were willing to make the donation for the VIP. We also want to let everyone know that as of today, the swag bag's all sold out. There's no more of those available for the public. We had no idea how that was going to go, and the acceptance has been just fantastic. So if you haven't gotten yours yet, they're all spoken for except for one. And the one that's not spoken for is we're trying to get our Twitter followers above 5K. And the moment we go above 5K, we're at 4.6 right now, then we're going to do a drawing, and we're going to give away one of the swag bags. So there is still one last chance left for those. So if you are out helping us promote, please do. The other thing is, please use the hashtag ILFFest2021. And we spell that, by the way, ILFEST. So there's not two Fs in there. And don't forget the hashtag sandwich of suffering, because we are going to have some fun. Chris is obligated to take at least two bites, and we're going to see how that rolls.
If there's anybody that is interested, any vendors that would like to be a part of ILF Fest, are you open to that?
Oh, heck yeah, we are. In fact, if you go to the sponsors page, go down to the bottom at vendors, there's an option where you can fill out a form, and you can send us the swag that you would like for us to place in the swag bags we're going to be giving away. So the early bird swag bags, those are all done. The day of, we're doing vendor swag bags where there's no telling what you're going to get. It's the equivalent of walking around to the conference and just grabbing stuff off the table and then opening it up later when you get home and seeing what you got. Whatever shows up in those bags is going to show up. I can tell you we've got a couple of books in there. Of course, there's going to be some ILF stuff in there. Beyond that, it's pretty much a mystery as to what's going to show up. To give you an idea, last year, the ones we sent out, some of them weighed 15 pounds. So what we're hoping for is something similar to that. We need you guys. If you're a vendor, you have stuff that you want to get out, we need 10 of each. Send them now so we can get you lined up and get you in the vendor swipe bags.
We might even have to get some layer 8 stickers into there as well.
I would love it.
I want to say thank you to the guests today. I want to say thank you to Shane, Mandy, and John for joining us today. Thanks so much for doing this.
This was fantastic. Thank you.
And thank you for having us.
Thank you for listening to the Layer 8 podcast. You can find out more information about us at layer8conference.com and find more podcast episodes on many of your favorite platforms. We hope you enjoy these episodes as much as we enjoyed making them.